This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
There were two things you could be when I was a kid. You could get married young, like my cousin who got engaged at 16, or you could be a bad girl.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
Big Bird, when people die, they don't come back.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
If you love somebody, you kiss them.
And need to talk about more.
Oh, I forgot my money.
I'm Anna Sale.
I don't know if it was a cultural thing, but you never would question an adult.
Sonia Manzano grew up in the Bronx in the 1950s. Her parents moved there from Puerto Rico.
Adults always told you things, whether you understood it or not, was meaningless to them. You could not say, but what do you mean by that? They would say either you'll know when you grow up or shut up and get out of the way.
What were the things that you never asked your mom about when you were a little girl?
Well, when I was little, I didn't ask her why she would change her mind so much about my father.
Sonia's mother left her father repeatedly when Sonia was a kid. They'd move out, get a new place, and then her parents would reunite. Sonia's father drank a lot. And whenever he drank, he'd beat her mother.
I was always standing between them. When I was 5, 6, 7, and 8, I was standing between them.
Until Sonia was 21 years old. It was Christmas.
We're waiting for my dad to come home, and it's getting darker and darker, and he's not home, and which is not a good sign. And we're all knowing that he could come home in a drunken and violent mood, and he does come home, and he attacks my mother with a telephone, as a matter of fact. And I remember deciding that I was going to put an end to it.
Were you able to?
Yes. That was the moment where I put the wheels in motion for her to get a separation and a divorce.
Did your mom want to get divorced?
No. And that's something that I'm kind of facing now as an adult, that she didn't want to, that this was her life, that this is how she might have defined herself.
Did you and your mother discuss the divorce after it was final?
Years later, yes, we did. And she was happy that she had gotten a divorce. And I asked her about our life and why she allowed it to go on. I was still the kid wanting to get an answer. And she said, well, you know, I just thought that when you guys grew up, you'd understand. And I remember thinking, you might understand, but you don't gain the childhood back.
Sonia couldn't get her childhood back, but she became part of all of ours. She's Maria from Sesame Street.
Maria? What exactly does hola mean?
Hola means hello in Spanish.
Huh. Well, what do you know?
For 44 years, she explained numbers and letters and life to little kids.
Amo needs to know how to say no. Don't do that. Or no, Amo doesn't like that. Isn't that right, Maria?
You know, Elmo, you're right. It is important to know how to say no.
No one said these kinds of things to Sonia when she was growing up. Do you think of your childhood as kind of a confusing time?
Oh, sure. Extremely confusing. A kid sees things black and white. Yes and no. There's good guys and bad guys. And a lot of kids are in the middle of disparate concepts. How could I love my father when he battered my mother? How could I love the music he played? How could I love my mother who kept us in this situation? How could I love her sense of humor, want her approval, yearn for her caress? At the same time that I was critical of the situation we were in. There's the rub.
And for Sonia, things only got more disorienting when puberty hit.
It was awful at that time. It was like I don't have enough trouble. Now I have to deal with breasts. It was ridiculous. Because all of a sudden, when you went to Crotona Park pool and you jumped in the water, five guys would jump in after you and fill you up. So you couldn't go to the pool. You had to get underclothes so you could jump rope. You couldn't lean out the window. I used to lean out the window so I could watch the people on the Third Avenue L. And, you know, they'd be guys looking down your shirt and you'd be completely oblivious to it.
What did your mom and your older sister tell you about dealing with men?
Nothing. When someone got married, they'd say about a year later, so how did he turn out? Did he turn out good or bad? So it was like the woman had no choice. It was like luck of the draw. However he turned out, you were stuck with it. And then there was the whole pregnancy thing. That was pretty hilarious. My mother said, well, you know, babies come when people get married. When God sees that you're married, babies come. But all these girls would always get pregnant. And the expression was, le hicieron el daño. The woman was wronged. So I would say to Mom, hey, Mom, God makes an awful lot of mistakes in this neighborhood because none of these girls are married and he keeps, like, blowing it.
Sonia left that neighborhood. She got a scholarship to study theater at Carnegie Mellon. It was the late 1960s.
Society was on my side. America was an idealistic place and they wanted people like me to succeed.
Did it feel like that when you were an 18 or 19-year-old young woman that America wanted you to succeed?
Yeah.
Would you have said it that way?
Yeah, I mean,
people were listening. Still, when Sonia landed at school in Pittsburgh, it felt like she didn't fit anywhere.
It was like being on Planet X. It was so foreign to me. I was around a lot of white people for the first time. They didn't know what a Puerto Rican was, and there were hardly any students of color in that school at that time.
Did you find yourself kind of trying to fit in, or did your Puerto Ricanness become more pronounced as a way to express who you are?
I choose column two. From column two, exactly. I became more and more Puerto Rican in ways that I had never been Puerto Rican, but I had to stand up for myself, you know. All of a sudden, I had to play Aretha Franklin like 24/7 just to show these white kids what they had been missing or what they should have been listening to. Latins were invisible at that time. So I sort of tried to align myself with black people and their social issues. Then the Young Lords happened in El Barrio in 69, and they tried to sort of fashion themselves after the Black Panthers as well. They wanted you to embrace being Puerto Rican, but part of that culture was machismo and the domination of men over women. well, you can romanticize it and say it's part of our culture. Or you can say, I don't care. I know it's part of my culture, but I don't want that part.
Coming up, Sonia talks about how she got hired on Sesame Street and what it's like to look back on those first years of playing Maria.
I mean, some of that old footage, it looks like I rolled out of bed and didn't comb my hair. And I went a little bit overboard. I could have tweezed my eyebrows every once in a while.
We've been asking for your stories about death and money. We've heard from a lot of you about wills, paying for funerals, and sorting out estates. A listener named Ben told us what happened when he unexpectedly inherited $10,000 from a relative he'd never met.
First thing I knew I wanted to get with the money was bariatric surgery for my wife, who's been overweight pretty much her whole life. And so we get the surgery, and what ends up happening is that as she loses weight, she starts gaining more confidence, she starts going out more, she starts reevaluating our relationship, and I do as well. And we end up actually getting a mutual divorce only a few months after she got that surgery.
And April left us a voice memo about what happens when there isn't a will after a death. Her best friend and her best friend's husband were killed in a car accident. Their infant daughter survived.
Trying to predict what my friend and her husband would have wanted for their child, trying to plan for what to do with their money and with their home, with all of their belongings, was very, very painful. My therapist would tell you that that actually caused more pain for me and for their loved ones than their passing.
We're still collecting your stories about money and death. Record a voice memo on your smartphone and send it to us at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org or write us an email there. On the next episode, I talk with a woman we're calling Emma. She's a single mom and a sex worker.
I mean, we all do our work for money, so that's just the way it is. But if I didn't have to do it, if it wasn't the best pay, by far, just so above and beyond anything else that I can make in the time that I spend doing it, I wouldn't be doing this.
This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts. We have had a lot of exciting new things to share with you about the show recently, but this might be some of our biggest news yet. Death, Sex, and Money is officially going to be live in New York City at the Tribeca Festival on June 11th. And I want to personally invite you to the live taping we'll be doing with the legendary journalist Kara Swisher. If you know Kara's work, you know her ability to get people to tell her things is unmatched. And she does it in her signature, hard-charging way. She's not afraid of things getting a little combustible. I have a slightly different interview style, so we're going to talk about that and play around with that in experimental ways that I think will make this a special show unlike any of our other live shows up to this point. And it's not often that I get to do a live Death, Sex, and Money show in New York, so I really hope to see you there. Whether you're in the city, on the East Coast, or just been looking for a reason to visit New York City, come on June 11th for this show. You can get tickets now at tribecafilm.com/deathsexmoney. We are so excited to see you there.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, here to tell you about a great mystery. That mystery is you. As the host of a podcast called Hidden Brain, I explore big questions about what it means to be human. Questions like, where do our emotions come from? Why do so many of us feel overwhelmed by modern life? How can we better understand the people around us? Discover your hidden brain. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. Sonia Manzano didn't mean to get into kids' TV. She moved back to New York from Pittsburgh to perform in an off-Broadway show. It was called Godspell, and Sonia was in the original cast.
Turn back, oh man, forswear thy foolish way.
That's how she was noticed by this public television show for kids.
I remember watching Sesame Street at Carnegie Mellon. I walked into the student union, and there was James Earl Jones reciting the alphabet in this very deliberate manner.
C.
A, B, C. And the letters flashed over his head. I said, what the heck is this? And then I get the call after I'm doing Godspell to come in because they wanted Latino representation. So they called me in, and there weren't that many Latin actors, I have to admit, to choose from. And I got cast on the show. And then I met Emilio Delgado, who plays Luis on the show. And I didn't even know he was an actor. I thought he was an activist because every time you saw him, he'd pin a boycott grapes button on you. So I thought it was all, everybody was in this fervor of a better society.
Maria!
Oh.
Why are you walking around like that, muttering to yourself?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the right way to go in there and ask Luis to give me a raise.
Oh, I see. Maria?
Huh?
What's a raise?
Well, it means that I'm going to ask him to pay me more money for the work I do in the fix-it shop.
Oh, that's very important.
Yeah, you're telling me.
Do you remember how much you were paid when you were first hired?
$500 a week. It was an enormous amount of money. But I'll tell you something about money. Kids ask me a lot, am I rich? And I never knew, I wasn't sure how to answer it. Because, you know, but now I know, I've thought about it actually, because next kid, I'm gonna say this. It all depends on where you came from. From what my parents had, I'm rich. Compared to J-Lo, I'm poor as a church mouse.
So you're in your 20s when you start on Sesame Street. You didn't get married until you were 36?
Right. 30s, yeah.
Did you feel ambivalent about marriage after your parents' marriage?
Yes, I was in no hurry to get married. But I, when I was a little girl, I never was the one who said, I want to get married and I want to have children. That wasn't me.
What was it about your husband that made you want to commit to him?
He created order. He created, there's milk in the refrigerator. There's toilet tissue. And coming from a chaotic background, I love that. And, you know, of course, you have to love someone. You have to fall in love as well. But I think it was his sense of order and the way he can create a home.
What did your family, your husband's white?
Yes.
What did your family make of him?
My mother was thrilled. She was so happy that I was so old and finally getting married. I cannot tell you.
As Sonia's life moved into this new phase, so did her characters on Sesame Street. For years, Maria had worked alongside her friend, Luis, in the Fix-It shop. Then things changed.
I should tell him. Shouldn't I? I should tell him. Don't you think?
At least tell me.
Big Bird, I'm in love with him. I'm in love with Luis.
When I got married to the character Luis on Sesame Street, I was 4 months pregnant in that white dress on the rooftop. And, you know, Maria's life kind of followed mine. And the purpose of that was we were going to show Latin people with the same hopes and dreams as anyone else. We want to get married. We want to have a nice job at the Fix-It shop and fix a toaster. You want to help your friends. You want to have a baby. You want to look for daycare. And you want your child to have an education.
What did you want to make sure children understood about love and family when you were thinking about how to tell that story?
Because we were two characters on a show who had known each other for years, the writers were wondering, how do we justify them falling in love all of a sudden? And we did not want to do the cliche where a man and a woman know each other, but suddenly she takes her glasses off and unpins her hair and he sees what a beauty she is and they fall in love. So Maria comes upon Luis as he is nurturing a sick kitten. And as she sees his sensibility, as he loves this kitten, her heart melts, and that's how they fall in love.
Maria soon got pregnant, which incorporated Sonia's real-life pregnancy into the show. Sonia's infant daughter, Gabriella, even played Maria's daughter, Gabriella, for a time, which allowed Maria to explain some of the more perplexing parts of new parenthood to the kids on Sesame Street.
You're feeding Gabriella, right?
Yeah, she's drinking milk from my breast.
Is that the only way you could feed her?
Oh, no. Sometimes I feed her this way, and sometimes I feed her with a bottle. Babies change everything. It changes the way you look at the world. This new person is living with you. And I thought, you know, maybe I could share this feeling with children.
What was your relationship like with your daughter? How was it different than what your relationship with your mother was like?
Well, I was really a hover mother. I was really involved in her life. Probably too involved. I went the other extreme. I don't think my mother was interested in my girlfriends. Whereas I was very interested in my daughter's girlfriends. Uh-huh. And having her when I was 38, I guess I was 38 when I had her, she had friends who had younger mothers. So all the mothers weren't on the same page as to what was appropriate. Whereas my mother, everybody was on the same page. All parents, all the grown-ups were, girls can do nothing. They all agreed in that. It was a certain sort of, a little bit of comfort there.
Sonia's parents are both gone now. She stayed close with her mother until her mother died. Her father was not a part of her adult life.
I did want to exclude him. I just wanted to to eradicate him from my life, which is impossible. You could not see someone, but you know, you could hang up on them when they call, but you really have to face people to really get rid of them.
What was going on in your life when you thought, I need to cut this off?
I was in love. I had a baby. It was going to be about me now.
How many years had it been since you'd spoken to your father when you reached out?
Oh, I want to say I'd spoken to him for, a good 20 years.
How'd it feel?
I was really quite nervous, and, you know, I walked in and he said, "Hey, Sonia, how are you? God, it's great to see you." Just as if I had just seen him a few weeks ago. Or maybe, you know, not that there was any bad blood. It was all sort of like this kind of acceptance of things happen. And you could put in another word for things, if you like.
Did you feel that way?
No, I think you're still, you know, I think the younger you are, the more you want answers to things and you want to explain things. The older you are, the more you are willing to say, you know, at the end of the day, we're all going to die or something. There's no sense wasting time explaining what you can't explain.
Sonia Manzano. She retired from Sesame Street this year. She has a new memoir called Becoming Maria, Love and Chaos in the South Bronx. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC. The team includes Katie Bishop, Emily Botine, James Ramsey, Destry Sibley, and Joe Plourd. The Reverend John Delure and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death, Sex, Money. And if you're not already subscribed, sign up for our weekly Death, Sex, and Money newsletter. You'll get updates about the show, podcast episodes we love, and behind-the-scenes stories, like about our team's recent field trip to take a trampoline exercise class that turned out to also be a taping of the reality show Mob Wives.
This is the mob we're talking about. She's trying to speak on a lifestyle that she knows nothing about.
Subscribe at deathsexmoney.org/newsletter. And yes, when I was talking with Maria from Sesame Street, I did bring up sex.
What are you going to ask me about that?
Just how do you think about sex at this point in your life?
Sex? Nice work if you can get it. And you can get it if you try.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
and activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gaze Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.